Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover in this audio Proverbs chapter 9, which I will call the Invitations of Wisdom and of Folly. Two personified women, Wisdom and Folly, capital W and capital F. Solomon starts down Proverbs 9, verses 1 through 6. Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out her seven pillars. She has prepared her food. She has mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her maidens. She calls from the tops of the heights of the city. Whoever is naive, let him turn in here. To him who lacks understanding, she says, "Come, eat of my food and drink of the wine I have mixed. Forsake your folly and live, and proceed in the way of understanding." Now in verse 1, Solomon says, wisdom has built her house. What is this house? Adam Clark says, it's the universe. Another commentator says, it's the heavenly house where God the Father lives. I don't think so. It's just a poetic figure. Wisdom has built a house. We put that in the midst of our minds as a poetic allusion. Wisdom has hewn out her seven pillars for this house. In verse 1, here's some options for what the seven pillars are. The seven liberal arts. Really? That's a wild one. How about the 7 days of creation, which would make the house of wisdom the whole universe again? That's somebody whose imagination has run away from them. Adam Clark says, the seven pillars are the seven gifts of the Holy Spirit. I don't even know if there are seven gifts of the Holy Spirit. Seems like you could count more than that. I don't believe that for a minute. Seven is the number of perfection and completion, so wisdom's house is complete and perfect. That's all it means. And, of course, a pillar holds up the house, so the house is completely established. Now, in verse 2, wisdom has mixed her wine after she prepared the food for the guest, for the young, naive, or uninstructed person to come in. Wisdom has mixed her wine. A couple of options the commentators split over as to what that means. What is that mixed wine? Option number 1, wisdom flavored the wine with spices to improve the flavor. That's Ellicott's view, Cambridge commentator's view, and Joseph Benson's view. On the other hand, some commentators say that wisdom has mixed her wine with water. She diluted the wine with water. The pulpit commentator says that, and the Colin Deutch commentary says the same thing. Otherwise, the water was too luscious or too fiery to drink. One of my commentators says, Colin Deutch even goes further and says the wine is mixed either with warm or cold water. Now that's getting particular. The commentator Poole says that the water was put in the wine partly for refreshment and partly for wholesomeness to make it healthy. I think these commentators are commentating about things they don't understand. Let's just take it. She mixed her wine with fragrant spices to make the wine attractive. She set her table at the end of verse 2. Verse 3, she has sent out her maidens. In other words, she sent out some servants to invite people to come to the banquet in her house. And not only that, she stands herself at the tops of heights of the city and calls. Heights of the city would be hills surrounding the city. And of course, people could hear someone calling from the top of a mountain very clearly. We see wisdom calling also in two other Proverbs, Proverbs 1, verse 20 through 21. Wisdom calls out in the street. She raises her voice in the public squares. She cries out above the commotion. She speaks at the entrance of the city gates. So in Proverbs 1, wisdom is speaking at the city gates. And in Proverbs 8, just like in Proverbs 9, wisdom is speaking on the heights. Proverbs 8, 1 through 4. Doesn't wisdom call out? Doesn't understanding make her voice heard? At the heights overlooking the road, at the crossroads, she takes her stand. At the heights, on the hills overlooking the road, beside the gates at the entrance to the city, at the main entrance, she cries out, "People, I call out to you. My cry is to mankind." Unfortunately, mankind doesn't listen too well when wisdom is calling out. The heights, John Gill says, could be the ridges of heights or conspicuous places within the city. I think it sounds more like the tops of ridges on the outside of the city. We go now to Proverbs 9, verses 7 through 9. Solomon continues, "He who corrects a scoffer gets dishonor for himself, and he who reproves a wicked man gets insults for himself. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase his learning." In verse 7, Solomon says that the man who corrects a scoffer gets dishonor for himself. Correcting a scoffer would be to cast one's pearls before swine, which, of course, Jesus warned us not to do, because the swine will turn around and eat those pearls up. It's a complete waste of time to give wisdom to somebody who's not interested in hearing it. He will turn on you. He will say, I don't care what you say. Reminds me of a story. The other day at a Lowe's, two ladies were putting a bunch of power tools into shopping carts in order to steal the tools, to shoplift them. They brazenly walked right in front of the counter and walked right out the front door. The staff of Lowe's were instructed not to stop them because our wonderful legal system makes it more expensive for Lowe's to stop the shoplifters because the shoplifters would then accuse them of false imprisonment or assault or something, and it's just cheaper just to let them steal it. So one of the cashiers was not happy about the thievery, and so she looked at these two women and said, you're going to hell. So she was correcting a scoffer. The scoffer looked back and said, well, so are you. So what good does it do to correct a scoffer? Tell them the truth. They don't care. He who reproves a wicked man gets insults for himself. That's what happened to this cashier. She reproved the two wicked women who were stealing, and she got an insult in return. You're going to hell too. Verse 8, do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Now here's some other scriptures that say the same thing. Matthew 18, verse 15. This is the famous church discipline chapter. If your brother sins, go and show him his fault in private. If he listens to you, you have won your brother. These scriptures are not talking about reproving a scoffer. They are talking about reproving a wise man, which is also in verse 8, the last part of the verse. First part of the verse says, do not reprove a scoffer or he will hate you. The last half of the verse says, reprove a wise man and he will love you. Matthew 18, 15, if your brother sins, go and show him his fault in private. If he listens to you, you have won your brother. Well, there's a chance there that you reprove somebody, he sees his sin, and he'll be thankful for it. He won't be mad at you. He won't be angry at you. Proverbs 28, 23, he who rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with the tongue. I just read Benjamin Disraeli told somebody one time, the famous Victorian Tory Prime Minister of England, in the late 19th century, he said, everybody loves flattery, and with royal people, you've got to spread it on thick as with a trowel. But here, Solomon says that a proper rebuke will earn one more favor than flattery will. Proverbs 27, verses 5 through 6, better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. So iron sharpens iron, faithful are the wounds of a friend. You've heard all this before. He who rebukes a man will afterward find more favor. So there's something about reproving a wise man. It's a good thing. Verse 9, give instruction to a wise man and he will still be wiser. You'll help him along. This is one thing about wisdom or spiritual knowledge. The rich get richer. Jesus said that. He hides the parables, or he hides the truth in parables, so that the people listening to those parables will not reap judgment on their heads, but to those whom much has been given, much more will be given when they understand the spiritual secrets of the parables and they learn more and more and more as they walk with the Lord. Give instruction to a wise man and he will be wiser. Teach a righteous man and he will increase his learning. We turn now to Proverbs 9, verses 10 through 18, and we will be finished with this discussion of Proverbs 9. Solomon continues, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me your days will be multiplied, and years of life will be added to you. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself, and if you scoff, you alone will bear it. The woman of folly is boisterous. She is naive and knows nothing. She sits at the doorway of her house on a seat by the high places of the city, calling to those who pass by who are making their path straight. Whoever is naive, let him turn in here. And to him who lacks understanding, she says, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol. Sheol, of course, being the grave or death. Now, verse 10, Solomon says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That, of course, is reverential fear, not servile fear. Solomon's already said this in chapter 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. In verse 7 of chapter 1, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. In Proverbs 9, verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Knowledge and wisdom are basically synonyms. We won't make a distinction. Sometimes people say knowledge is factual knowledge and wisdom is how to use that factual knowledge, but we won't make that fine distinction here. The knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Of course, the Holy One is God. Verse 11, Solomon says, for by me your days will be multiplied. That's the NASB translation. The Holman Christian Study Bible translation is this. For by wisdom your days will be many, not by me, but by wisdom your days will be many. And so the Holman Christian Study Bible takes verse 11 as wisdom talking, not the Lord talking. So we'll take it that way. Years of life will be added to you if you listen to wisdom, and if you listen to the Lord, if you have reverence for the Lord, and if you have knowledge of the Holy One, years of life will be added to. Long life is one of the benefits of following the Lord. Again, this is a general promise. It's not true of everybody. Jesus only lived 30 years, and all the faith heroes in Hebrews 11 didn't live a long life. But most of the time, people do. And it makes sense, because if you're wise, you're not going to do stupid things like snort cocaine. That'll make you die young. Now, there are lots of scriptures that promise long life for obedience to God's law. The law of Moses has this in Exodus 20, verse 12. Honor your father and your mother so that you may have a long life in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. Moses says in Deuteronomy 5:33, follow the whole instruction the Lord your God has commanded you so that you may live, prosper, and have a long life in the land you will possess. Deuteronomy 30, verse 19, I call, this is Moses speaking, I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you today that I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Choose life so that you and your descendants may live. Well, those were scriptures in the law promising long life. Here's some psalms that promise long life also. Psalms 21, verse 4, the author of which is David, says this, he asked life of you. You gave it to him, length of days forever and ever. This is God's king asking life of the Father. He, God's king, David, maybe typically as Jesus, he asked life of you. You gave it to him, length of days forever and ever. Psalm 91:16, the author of which is unknown, is referring to a godly saint. With a long life I will satisfy him, satisfy that godly saint, and let him see my salvation. So not only is long life promised in the law of Moses and in the Psalms, it's also promised in other Proverbs. Proverbs 3, verse 16, first part of the verse, long life is in her right hand, talking about wisdom's right hand. Drop down two verses to Proverbs 3:18, she, again referring to wisdom, wisdom is a tree of life to those who embrace her, and those who hold on to her are happy. A tree of life. Proverbs 4:10, listen, my son, accept my words, and you will live many years. All right, wisdom is still speaking in verse 12. She says, if you are wise, you are wise for yourself. Now, what does that mean? Well, it's a clumsy translation from the NASB. The Holman Christian Study Bible says you are wise for your own benefit. In other words, you get a reward for yourself when you're wise. That makes sense. The NIV says, your wisdom will reward you. Wisdom has its benefits. They're quite obvious. Last part of verse 12, if you scoff, you alone will bear it. Well, what does that mean? It means the bad effects of being stupid will not redound to the wise. In other words, if a stupid person who rejects wisdom scoffs at wisdom, scoffs at the Lord, then the punishment for that will come on his head alone. But wise people aren't going to experience that. Verse 13, the woman of folly is boisterous. Woman of folly. Well, who is the woman of folly? Well, she is, of course, personified, but what exactly does folly mean? She's a woman of folly, but that means what kind of a woman is she? Well, it could be she's just a stupid woman as opposed to wisdom. That has an intellectual slant to it. But most probably it is a woman who is characterized by carnal and sensual pleasure, or who is able to give carnal or sensual pleasure. This would fit right in with Solomon's constant admonitions against adulteresses and harlots. Some other people said she's a woman of heresy, she's a woman of superstition, it's the devil. No, I think folly would probably refer to carnal or sensual pleasure here. She's boisterous, verse 13 says. The woman of folly is boisterous. I like that translation. That's the NASB. The Holman Christian Study Bible has, she is rowdy. Proverbs 7:11 says, she, referring to the adulteress, is loud and defiant. Her feet do not stay at home. Well, the woman of folly is the same way. She's not of a quiet and submissive spirit. In verse 14, folly sits at the doorway of her house. Now notice that she's just sitting there as opposed to the woman who is personified as wisdom. Wisdom is setting up a banquet, mixing wine for her guests, calling out for her guests to come in, sending out her maidens to invite people to her banquet. She's preparing food for the banquet. She's hewn out a house with seven pillars. She's working, but not the woman of folly. She's just sitting there, lazy. She's sitting on a seat by the high place of the city. She, again, is up high, just like the woman of wisdom was, calling out so that everybody can hear her. She's calling to those who pass by who are making their path straight. In other words, she's calling to people who are doing right, and she wants to seduce them away from the right path. That is just the way sin works. Sinners, they love to see straight people fall. They love to see people who are following the Lord have an affair, get caught at something, get caught into some kind of hypocrisy, or do something stupid. Evil people love that. So these people making their path straight, so all of a sudden they hear this woman up on the heights calling them, whoever is naive, let them turn in here. Now, naive is NASB translation. The Holman Christian Study Bible has inexperienced. That makes a lot more sense. Again, Solomon's talking to his son or his sons. They're inexperienced. Whoever is naive, whoever is inexperienced, come in here and I'll corrupt him. And to him who lacks understanding, she says, verse 17, stolen water is sweet. There's something about stealing something that brings a level of excitement to it temporarily. You do something illegal, it's exciting as you dodge the cops, but sooner or later, your life is destroyed. Bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Again, same idea. You steal some bread and then you eat it where nobody can see you, and all of a sudden, oh, this is fun. It's us against the world. Isn't this cool? Now, when Folly says that stolen water is sweet, she's probably referring to the fact that water in that hot climate was valuable and liable to be stolen. The analogy is appropriate, stolen water, because going into an adulteress like Folly, and I'm assuming that Folly is an adulteress, going into her was stealing that woman from her husband because she's an adulteress. So you're stealing an adulteress. Oh, that's sweet. At first it is. And getting it on with Folly, bread eaten in secret, as the analogy is, you go into that adulteress. Oh, that's nice. It's pleasant. But the naive, uninstructed boy will learn in verse 18, he does not know that the dead are in the house of Folly. Her guests are in the depths of Sheol. That adulteress seemed to be pleasant at first. The thrill of doing something you're not supposed to is added to the pleasure of the thing itself. This idea is also expressed in Proverbs 20, verse 17 by Solomon. Bread obtained by falsehood is sweet to a man, but afterward his mouth will be filled with gravel. And with that unpleasant admonition, we are now finished. I think we can summarize the chapter by saying, don't commit adultery. Keep your pants zipped up. We're now prepared to go to chapter 10, which I will label the Proverbs of Solomon. Obviously not all of them, but that's what the English Study Bible uses for its header for chapter 10. So that's what we're going to call chapter 10, the Proverbs of Solomon. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.